This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 34.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's up, everybody? This is Josh Dorkin, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast and founder of BiggerPockets.com. Happy to be here with you guys today alongside, I'm actually not alongside, but I'm virtually alongside my good buddy, Brandon Turner. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Josh Dorkin, how the heck are ya?
Oh boy, I'm good, man. I'm good.
It's a cheesy episode right here.
Oh my God, it's about to begin. Well, we've got Anson on.
We do have Anson, and he is not cheesy. He is hilarious.
Anson is a funny, funny dude. So we'll introduce him later. But yeah, listen, everything's good. Very excited to be back for yet another episode of the show. Excited that our development team on Bigger Pockets is off of vacation.
Yes.
And back working away, making cool things happen. But yeah, things are great. Things are great. I'm very excited about the show to come.
Me too. Me too, definitely. I just got done with the Minnesota State Fair. I was there twice in the past 3 days. And yeah, it was good. I'm on a little vacation to Minnesota, so I'm heading back home tomorrow.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, for anyone listening, I've actually put out a challenge to Brandon across the past week to get videos of himself chowing down on some deep fried butter or something else, you know, real state fairish, and he just totally wussed out. He completely.
I took a picture of the deep fried candy bar booth or bacon. Yes. Or deep fried candy bar wrapped in bacon. I think it was something like that. Anyway. Yeah. I did not enjoy that. I just had a Pronto pup and it was amazing. It's like a corn dog, but good stuff.
Yeah. No. Well, you know, if you guys are listening and you are going to a state fair, we want a photo of you eating something deep fried and nasty. So
yeah.
Send us your deep fried butter pics.
Yes, please.
Yes. All right. So on to the show here. Before we go and start the interview, we are going to do our
quick tip.
Yeah. So today's quick tip is unanswered post. If you go to the forums, you'll see at the top of biggerpockets.com/forums, you'll see a tab that says unanswered. If you go there, you will see posts that people have spent time asking questions and sharing their thoughts. And these are people who are waiting for a response from you. So please jump in, check out those unanswered posts because, you can help your colleagues make new friends and be a valuable member of the Bigger Pockets community by doing so. And hopefully you will jump in and make that happen. So quick tip, make it happen.
Good tip.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so on today's show, we have Anson Young as a guest. Anson is a flipper and wholesaler here in the friendly confines of the Denver, Colorado area. Anson does some virtual wholesaling, and he's actually a licensed real estate agent as well. Anson's been in the game now for 8 years, and as I said earlier, he's really a funny guy. He's currently running the Bigger Pockets unofficial meetup for the Denver area, and so if you're local, you definitely want to link up with him, and if you're not local, you still want to link up with him because he's doing deals around the country now virtually, which is awesome and which we're going to talk about.
Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today. You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. Connectinvest.com/VP. Want to dive deep into commercial real estate, entrepreneurship, leadership, and the economy? Tune into the Walker Webcast, hosted by the CEO of Walker & Dunlop, one of the largest commercial real estate finance and advisory services firms in the nation. As an unparalleled leader in commercial real estate, CEO Willie Walker frequently appears as an expert on major platforms like CNBC and the New York Times. He's even been on the Bigger Pockets podcast network, too. On the Walker Webcast, you'll hear from guests like A-Rod, renowned economist Dr. Peter Linneman, and experts from Walker & Dunlop's capital markets, research, and investment sales groups. So fire up the Walker Webcast on your favorite podcast app or join live on Wednesdays to see Willie interact with his guests. Plus, you can always catch the replay on demand afterward. Stay ahead of the curve with insights for life from the Walker Webcast. Learn more and subscribe to the Walker Webcast at walkerdunlop.com/pockets. And be sure to follow Walker & Dunlop on all your favorite social media channels too. That's walkerdunlop.com/pockets.
Anson, welcome to the show. How's it going, man?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Great, great.
Yeah, man, doing awesome. Doing
very good.
It's very cool to have you. I think you're our first local Denver guy that we're interviewing. So that's pretty cool.
That's good. I could be doing this from your kitchen table, but phone calls just as impersonal.
Yes, exactly. Well, I didn't want my face that close to yours next to my giant blue microphone.
Yes, I've heard about those things.
Yeah, didn't you and I do that, Josh, back like I don't remember what episode that was, but we recorded from your kitchen table.
Yeah, I was a little nervous as your mouth came close to mine every time somebody had something to say. It was weird.
Yeah, we're pretty classy. All right, well let's get into the interview here, Anson. Why don't we just start out with a basic question? What do you do? Like what kind of investing do you do?
I do mainly wholesaling these days. I've done flipping and wholesaling. Currently wholesaling and actually kind of revamping my flipping business to get back into it, because that's what I really, really like to do. There's stories involved in that we can get into later, but wholesaling is primary right now.
Right on. And how'd you end up getting into that? How'd you start out as an investor? What got you going?
As an investor, I started out like a lot of people do. I got a gift of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And while that gave me a good mindset, I ended up reading it on the way down to Phoenix as we were moving, my wife and I. And right when I landed, I basically just started in with trying to get in with people who were doing what I wanted to do, which was just investing. Started with the book. Obviously, it expanded from there. I ended up taking a lot of crap jobs from investors and agents in order to kind of get my feet wet, pay my dues, and get started.
Nice. Well, can I actually ask, what kind of jobs were those? Can we go into that a little bit? Because a lot of people, they want to know how to kind of get started, and I think that's a good way to do it.
And doing crap jobs is a good way to get started.
That it is.
I mean,
that's a tweetable topic right there.
Crap jobs. Yeah, that's right. I ended up doing just a lot of things that other people didn't want to do. I was from running contracts to actually installing signs and paperwork. BPOs. I did a lot of BPOs and valuation type stuff. And,
were you an agent at the time or no?
Not at the time, no.
Okay.
But I got a good start with basically here's the MLS. I'm going to park you in front of it for 8 hours. You're going to do, you know, a certain amount of BPOs, and you're going to go out and try to find, you know, deals for us, kind of thing.
And really, so, really quick, tell everyone what a BPO is for those
people. Oh, I'm sorry. It's a broker price opinion, and it's something that a bank will hire an agent to do, to give their broker price opinion on a certain property, whether it's a short sale or an REO.
Got it. All right. So you're doing these crappy jobs. And then what?
And then, so I'm doing these crap jobs. And then basically I came into a source of deals, which was an REO agent who's a good friend of mine. And I ended up partnering. I had a deal, but I didn't have any money. And I ran into another agent who had money, but didn't have any deals. So it's obviously a match made in heaven. We partnered up to do our first flip deal here in Denver. And it actually worked out really well, that partnership. We still partner on and off on deals even today.
Nice.
So what was that? What?
Yeah. What a time, boys.
I got this. All right. So can you tell us a little bit more about, can you tell us a little bit more about that actual first deal?
Absolutely. It was an REO that I got under contract, and then I went and we partnered up with this other agent who was just bringing the money, and he's a very good handyman type. He can do A to Z with construction, probably not, you know, the crazy electrical stuff or anything that's you know, from the ground up construction, but he can do full rehabs. So we went in, bought this place for $80,000, and we ended up putting in about $14,000. So it was kind of a lipstick rehab. It didn't need anything crazy. And he did all the work. And I came in and helped. I probably messed up a few things when I came in to help. I'm not handy at all. And then we ended up selling it for about $144,000. And obviously, we did okay on it. So it was a great match.
Nice. I think the partnership idea when flipping houses is an awesome idea. I think a lot of people try to flip houses and they want to do it on their own the first time because they think, I don't want to, you know, split 50% of my profit. But, you know, I think it's a great idea. I've done it a number of times. I'd say like half of my flips I've done have been with a partner of some kind.
I agree. And that one was more of a 70-30 arrangement.
I was going to ask. Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't do any of the work. I did find the deal and I did, you know, help sell it. Obviously, at that time I was an agent already. So I did help sell it. And, you know, obviously just bringing a deal shouldn't get you 50% of the money unless, you know, unless your partner is comfortable with that, but he did most of the work. So he should get most of the money. And, you know, 30% of something is better than nothing.
So he managed the entire project as well, then, is what you're saying?
He did, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Right on. Okay, so that's not bad. I mean, you got this first deal off the ground, and you know, from there, did you guys continue to do deals together, or did you go off on your own? How'd that flow?
Well, the next deal that I found was a pretty thin deal, and so what I did is I ended up wholesaling it to him. And he went ahead and put in his own money and fixed and flipped it on his own. And I went on, found a private money partner to fund my next three deals. And so I did the next three on my own without a partner. So I just did the private hard money route and went from there.
So you said it was a thin deal, but he went ahead and did it anyway. So you went, you wholesaled it. Did he actually end up making any money, or was it a deal that in retrospective was kind of a crap wholesale deal that a more experienced flipper may not have taken?
That's not how I roll, Josh. No,
it's not calling you out or anything. I know you wouldn't do that today, of course, but you know.
No, of course. It's it was still a good deal. It was just too thin to split 50-50, we felt.
Gotcha.
And so with his money involved, it was better just to pay me, you know, $2,000 or $2,500 for it. And he went on to make good money on it. So nice. I don't feel too bad for him. So.
Okay. Well, was it two or $2,500? Which was it?
It was a while ago. I believe it was $2,500.
I'm kidding, man. I'm just trying to bust your chops. But yeah, no, I got you. Well, that makes sense. So, you know, in this case, you're working with the guy. there's a deal. There's definitely money to be had. However, just splitting that opportunity wasn't necessarily going to work. So I think it's a good point for listeners, you know, that sometimes a deal is still a deal, but it may not be a deal if you have to start slicing it up amongst other people.
Exactly. Yeah. That's correct.
I did a flip last year, and I think we made at the end combined 15,000, but then we had to split that. So we got 7,500, and then I paid taxes on that. I think I ended up with, you know, under 5 by the time I was done. And that was exactly that thing. It was probably too thin. I shouldn't have partnered on that one, but yeah, it worked out. I mean, it was still 5 grand, but yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of work for 5 grand too.
All right. So, so how are you actually finding these deals, Anson?
I am a MLS guy. From the beginning, it's just kind of my roots of where I started. I'm a MLS junkie, as it were. And nice. Pretty much everything has come from there that I've done so far, except for a handful of off-market stuff.
Okay. Nice. Do you find that drying up now?
It is getting a little thinner. However, you know, we're still finding decent deals. You just have to really know how to dig for them. And digging, you have to dig a lot deeper these days.
And these are you're finding these on the MLS.
Yes, sir.
In the city of Denver.
In Denver, yes.
Right on. So what address? No, I'm just kidding.
Well,
you know, because I'm not looking for deals in Denver or anything like that. But yeah.
But if I was, I would.
Yes, yeah, nice. All right. So okay, that's great. That's great. So you're still digging there. You're not doing any direct mail or any other kind of marketing then.
I've been testing direct mail. I see the advantages of off market, and I've done test marketing starting last October, and just kind of trying to find what exactly I want to do there. And I've been reaching out on Bigger Pockets to kind of find what's working for other people and try to mimic that, so I don't have to reinvent the wheel or anything. But there's a lot of really good direct mail guys there, so it's a great resource to tap into for sure.
Yeah, excellent. That is kind of like the popular thing right now is direct mail, and I know I keep talking about it every show, and I haven't actually officially started yet, but you know, we'll get there. So, you said you're buying in Denver. Are you doing any work elsewhere as well, or is it just Denver? Is that your kind of what you've been working on?
Denver was what I've been working on mostly. I do have MLS access in a number of different areas, like Phoenix. And I lived in Phoenix for a couple of years, and I understand the areas really well, and have been looking for deals on and off there. And I also have, thanks to partners and friends and agents and kind of just networking, you know, I do have MLS access in a number of different cities and have been doing sporadic deals here and there. I'm trying to kind of nail down how I want to best utilize that. There's only so many hours in the day. So I think I'm going to have to bring in VAs or something to help with, if I'm going to build a business around it, there has to be a structure there. So right now there's not a structure. I understand it. I can find sporadic deals there and sell them, but you know, the volume isn't huge. It's not impressive, let's say that.
Right on, right on. Well, let me ask you, how important do you really think it is to fully understand an area, understand a neighborhood before you start scouting for deals?
I think it's pretty important. I've found that, you know, if you do have MLS access, the easiest way to find what's hot is to search cash sales in the last 6 months. You know, find a really hot area that has a lot of cash sales, and then you have a pretty good baseline of where investors are buying in that neighborhood. If they're buying 3-2s for 100 grand, and then you go on and you search the same area for FHA sales or conventional sales, when these things are all fixed up and you see if they're selling for 200, let's say, you pretty much have a good general baseline of a neighborhood. Doing BPOs for a long time, I understand that you know, you're not going to cross any major streets. You want to stay within that subdivision, if possible. And you should have a pretty good baseline. Investors are buying for 100, they're reselling for 200. You know that pretty much if a deal comes on for 100 or 95 or 90, that you better jump on it because it's likely a good deal.
Yeah. So can you use that then? Say, you know, I said, you know what, Anson? I want to, I don't know, let's go wholesale some houses in Fairfax, Virginia. You know, can you literally, you know, find somebody who's got the MLS access, jump on and start doing a similar search, cash sales in the last 6 months, and find deals and opportunities that way? Does that just work, or do you have to have boots on the ground to really have a good idea of what we're dealing with?
Well, I'm going to say the first one, that I've got it to work with just doing it virtually. Obviously, having boots on the ground, you have a more intimate knowledge of areas, and you know there's a lot of people who you know, who live and invest there who will say, I won't invest on this street for this reason. And obviously, I wouldn't know that from a top-down perspective just on the MLS, you know, from my office in Colorado. So, but that said, I've had it work virtually for a few years now. Having the experience of doing a couple hundred BPOs every year for a few years has given me the experience to say, I know what I'm looking for just based on the raw data. Every now and then you'll get something really strange where if you did have boots on the ground, you would know that. But, you know, coming in from virtual on the internet, you may not know everything, but I think that the raw data doesn't lie. And if you see, you know, 40 sales in the last, you know, couple months in an area that are all cash, you can pretty much bet that that's a hot investor area and somewhere that you should be looking.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So you mentioned virtual, and I guess that's where the term like virtual wholesaling comes from. So I guess why don't we touch on that a little bit more, since you have more experience with that than I think most of our guests who have been here.
Sure.
So first of all, maybe just give a real broad definition. What is virtual wholesaling?
It would be wholesaling in an area that's different from where you live, from where you normally work. If I work Denver, virtual wholesaling would be properties in Phoenix or Dallas or Fairfax, Virginia, as Josh said, somewhere other than where I live and work.
Yeah. I've often thought about, you know, doing some virtual wholesaling myself because, you know, my area is very small. I don't live in a large metropolitan area. And so I kind of feel like wholesaling, like I think it would work, but on a very small scale. So if I wanted to, you know, take it up a notch, I could go look in, you know, Seattle or Tacoma or Denver or whatever. But
No, you're not allowed
to. No,
and just you're, it's kind of your own fault. I mean, you live in a town with like six people.
There are 3,000 in my town, I'll have you know.
You know, since you have like 3,005 cats, then it outnumbers the population.
I probably do have 3,000 cats that roam through my yard every day. Wow, I get made fun of for my cats even by our guests now. This is awesome. But I know Anson has cats. I know that he's a cat guy as well.
I wouldn't say a cat guy. I possess
Sorry, crazy cat guy. Is that better?
There you go. That's it.
Can we get back to the show, guys?
Yes, absolutely. Well, from when I realized that I had a wholesale deal in Aurora, which is the same city I live in, and I didn't even get in my car to go see it before I sold it, I pretty much realized it was one of those aha moments where I figured, you know what? If I can do this and it's 15 minutes away, I can do this pretty much anywhere. Now, obviously, I know my area a little bit better, but I've gotten it to work in Kansas City, Arizona, Georgia, a couple there. So it can work anywhere as long as you have. For me, MLS access is the only way to go. I couldn't imagine trying to do it off of Zillow or Redfin or anything else.
So yeah. So what about those people who don't have MLS access? I mean, do you have any tips for those guys?
I feel very bad for them. No. I think that there's, you know, there's definite ways to get access. I can't rely on data from those other sites that might be missing a lot of things. I would say that you can baseline some things off of Zillow or Redfin. I think that you had a guest just recently, maybe two episodes ago, that uses, you know, Zillow for their iPhone, something like that. To me, that would be data that I couldn't 100% trust, honestly. But there are ways that somebody could get MLS access, whether it's partnering up with an agent, becoming an unlicensed assistant to an agent, basically networking and showing value to those agents in return for something that I think is priceless, which is direct MLS access.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you know, like I don't have direct access to the MLS, but like my agent is only a text away. And so, I mean, that's an idea. Like if you can get a good relationship with an agent, like I text him probably like 10 times a day when I'm like, you know, in hunting mode. So and that's a suggestion for people too, that don't have it. Just, I don't know, bother your agent a whole lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that can work. I've never found an agent that's reliable enough to do that for me. But if you have that guy, then that's just as good, I think.
So, well, hopefully we can teach some more agents that way because this is a perfect transition because a couple weeks ago I wrote a post called The Ultimate Guide. Well, the Real Estate Agent's Ultimate Guide to Working with Investors. And it's like the longest blog post I've ever written. I mean, by far, like I think it was 9,000 words or something like that.
It was, and
like, I mean, epic post. I thought it was pretty good. Anyway, the whole thing is, listen, real estate agents, this is exactly what I wish every real estate agent knew about how quirky and weird we investors are. Like I think we all kind of have like weird, you know, we're different from the normal home buyers, right? So
absolutely.
Yeah, I made this guide. Hopefully, if there's any agents listening and with, you know, 12,000 some people listening to this show right now, hopefully a good chunk of them are agents. So yeah, go check it out. It's just biggerpockets.com/agent. You can get there and, yeah, check it out. So
nice. Back to I'll have to read it.
You will have to read it.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. But anyway, so you were transitioning to the agent thing, but I wanted to go back for just a second before you completed your transition there, Brandon, and talk about the neighborhoods that Anson's looking at, and also the properties that he's looking at. Yeah. You know, how does he find out? You know, how does he see them? How does he, you know, is he just relying on pictures on the MLS? And again, you know, in terms of neighborhood, is it really just, you know, hey, let's find a neighborhood where we can find, you know, tons of cash sales?
It's mainly looking for, you know, a hot activity, obviously. In order to get pictures or in order to get an idea of what you're getting into, my favorite way, especially virtually, I'm not licensed in that state that I'm working in, most likely. And so calling up the listing agent direct and getting having them write up your offer goes a long way. But you can also utilize, you know, pictures only tell you so much. But I've had good luck with finding field vendors who do this kind of work for REO agents, who just go take, you know, a crazy amount of pictures, crazy amount of detail in the reports, you know, pay them $20-$30 to kind of go vet a property, make sure that I'm not getting into anything crazy, and kind of go from there.
Gotcha. And do you care if the neighborhood is, you know, a you know, blue collar, white collar, you know, more dangerous neighborhood? I mean, does it matter?
I wouldn't go anywhere, you know, crazy dangerous. Usually they're blue collar neighborhoods. They're either first time homebuyer neighborhoods or maybe the next move up neighborhood. Yeah. I haven't gotten in anything that's white collar, you know, $500,000 stuff. Most of it is in the hundreds somewhere, if not, you know, buy in the 80s and can resell for 160, something like that. Nothing too much above that. Maybe too much above 200.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha.
And are these bank repos or are these you know, motivated sellers or what?
A good portion are REOs. Some are estates, and lately a lot of them are short sales. Even though the market's kind of ticking up and kind of getting those underwater people get their heads above water, but a lot of them are short sales, which are one of my favorite things, mainly because I view it as a time machine. It's called the short sale time machine, but it's basically, you know, once you lock it up and then whenever it gets negotiated out the other side, the market's changed. And even lately, you know, things that we locked up in October of last year are coming through finally. and they're coming through at October 2012 prices. And here we are with, you know, 2% appreciation per month, which doesn't sound crazy, but it's a really nice little time capsule where it comes out the other side at a better value.
That's and a of course,
it could go it could go the other way, you know, if the market was tanking.
Yeah.
But then you still have the option to walk away, thankfully. But we're going to keep the 2012 prices.
Nice. So using the short sale time machine method in a hot market is kind of a hot little tip there, I think.
It is, yeah. And it's patented. No, I'm just kidding. It's just
$997. I'll tell you full details on what you need to do.
What was that website?
It's philjoshespockets.com.
Nice.
No, that's awesome. I'd never heard anybody say that before, so that you're kind of blowing my mind right now, Anson. But that's cool. Yeah, it totally reminds me of like the options, right, in stock trading. I mean, that's the option idea. But anyway, so how do you get around, if you're wholesaling these and they are bank repos or short sales? I thought, you know, people say you can't wholesale a bank repo. How are you getting around that?
Oh, you absolutely can. Some of them will tack on a deed restriction, which means they try to tell you that you can't sell it within 3 months for a certain price. This is mainly a Fannie Mae thing. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, that's 120% of what you bought it for. And so a lot of times I'm not a greedy wholesaler. I will just take, you know, $5,000 to $7,000 to $10,000. I'm not looking for the home runs all the time. But a lot of times you can just skate under the radar of those deed restrictions by just having your exit sale price is lower than, you know, obviously what that deed restriction is. Or there's land contracts and LLC sales and all kinds of ways to kind of do alternate closings for the wholesale deal.
Okay. Are you doing double closings?
I mainly am. I will do LLC transfers with people who I know and trust and deal with on a regular basis.
Let's talk about that then, Rook. What is an LLC transfer?
LLC transfer is I get a contract or I get a property under contract with my LLC. It'll likely be a brand new LLC that I set up. Get it under contract. I find a buyer. And instead of doing a double close where I go and close it and then I close with my buyer, I will basically sign over the LLC to that buyer in exchange for you know, an LLC transfer fee, something, you know, you can call it whatever you want, but it's basically you're selling the business to somebody else with the intention that you have a property under contract with that business. And so on the day of closing, they walk in and they are, for all intents and purposes, the owner of that LLC at that point. And they just walk in and close it and you walk away with your fee and they walk away with the property.
And how are you funding the deal? Because obviously you need to fund the deal up front in order to make the initial acquisition.
Well, this all happens while the property's still under contract. So it's a literal zero money out of pocket type deal.
Okay, so you're doing this prior to close?
Yes, prior to close, yes.
Got it. So they're the ones who actually sign the closing docs. Because they're just transferring over whoever's in charge of the LLC, correct? So new person who's in charge of the LLC just signs the closing docs.
That's correct. Yep. At that point, they are the managing member of the LLC, and I've hopped off the LLC with my transfer check in hand, and you know, now they're the owner. So they walk in and they close it at title.
Nice. Wow. That's cool. You said that you only do that with people you trust. Is there a reason for that?
Well, first of all, it's kind of hard to explain to people who haven't done it before. I haven't got around that hurdle, it's kind of a headache. It's easier to double close. Yeah. People who you trust, you know, like a lot of other wholesalers have said on your show that my list might be a couple hundred people, but I really only deal with 3 to 5 people. And those 3 to 5, I'll do LLCs transfers all day long with. And then the rest, you know, I might have to do a few deals with them before I can fully trust them to do that kind of deal.
Yeah. Now, for those who haven't listened to the, you know, our podcast episode with Sharon Bornholtz or Jerry Puckett, can you explain real quick what a double closing is?
Absolutely. So I'm the buyer of, let's just say it's an REO. I go in and, well, I'll get it under contract. I'll find someone to sell it to, another investor. So I'll go in and I'll close it for, let's say, $100,000. And then the same day, I will close it with the investor that I have under contract for 110, let's just say, round numbers. And so there'll be two closings on one day, and I'll walk away with the difference between the two.
And the title company just takes care of that whole thing, right?
They do, yes.
That's cool. And do you have any trouble finding title companies that will do that? I know that's a common question in the forums all the time, is how do I find a double closing friendly title company? Any tips?
You know, and I see that question all the time. And I honestly, in anywhere that I've worked, I've never found one that won't do it. It's a very common transaction. And unless you're using, unless your investor buyer is using like a conventional loan or something that throws a wrench in the works, if it's all cash, I haven't found a title company that won't do it, honestly.
That's nice. Cool. You just got to ask for it, I guess.
Yeah, you just got to ask. Just say, hey, do you do same day closings or double closings? And, you know, many times it's a yes. And many times you can get just a hold open fee on your title and save, you know, save some money when you're transferring title. So,
there's a nice tip.
Yeah, I always ask for the hold open. And this might be just a Colorado, Arizona type thing, West Coast thing. We don't deal with real estate attorneys or anything, but yeah, hold open is you basically just pay the difference between title insurance. If you bought for 100 and you sold for 110, you know, the title insurance on the first transaction would be, you know, let's say $1,000. But then on the second side, you're only paying for $10,000 of title insurance and not $110,000 worth of title insurance. Ah. So the hold open is really nice to save money, especially when you're flipping or wholesaling, and you save money on that second sale, whether you're selling to another investor or to an FHA buyer who's buying your rehabbed house.
Oh, okay.
That's awesome.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, yeah. Hey, so how are you finding the cash buyers in these areas? So you've got, you know, you've got your you go, you find the deals. Where do you find the buyers?
I've been finding them mainly through, I will find the cash buyers in that neighborhood, and I'll start there. So I've had good luck with, you know, if I have a 3-2 in a certain area, I'll go find other guys who have closed 3-2s in that area. And I will, you know, I'll hunt them down through tax records. I will cold call them. I haven't really done the mailing thing yet. That's kind of a last option for me. Mm-hmm. I'll cold call them. I'll say, hey, I see you bought 123 Main Street. I have 126 Main Street for $5,000 less than you bought yours for. Do you have any interest? And a lot of times these guys who already have a rehab going in that neighborhood will jump on it because they can save some costs on rehabbing two houses right next to each other or down the street from each other. And that's my main way of finding kind of those off, you know, virtual type wholesale deals. When it comes to local Denver stuff, like I said, I have 3 to 5 main guys, and I don't really need anything else.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. So Anson, if you have MLS access, are you saying, cause I've never had it, are you saying you can look up, you know, who the cash buyers are that bought a 3-2 in that neighborhood? I mean, is that just as simple as plugging in some numbers?
It really is. Instead of searching for active sales, you'd be searching for sold properties within a certain time frame. And then you can even narrow it down to bedroom, bathroom. You can narrow it down to square footage. I mean, pretty much, you know, only two stories in that subdivision that have sold, and it'll pull them all up. And there's a tax record option on all the MLSs that I've seen. And it shows you, you know, sometimes they don't update right away. They don't update for a couple months, but generally it's the best resource to find those, you know, in an easy to read kind of manner. It's all right there on your screen, a nice grid of, you know, maybe 30 homes in your area. And then you know what you're working with at that point.
That's cool. I'm going to call my agent right after we get off this call, and I'm going to make him look that all up for me.
So. No, and that's great. And I've done it for other investors here in town, which they just say, hey, can I see all the cash sales in this area? And it's literally a 30-second thing and then an email, and that's it. Yep. For me anyways. So
yeah, that's great.
That's awesome.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes to help you see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like, so you can find a home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours even on the same day. with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to help you get the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed. As home prices and interest rates continue to rise and inventory levels dip, it's getting harder to find quality flips and wholesale deals. When there's not enough on-market inventory to go around, it's time to start looking off-market. Lucky for you, there are millions of homeowners nationwide who own a property they need to get off their hands. I got two words for you, my friend. PropStream it. PropStream is the leading real estate data provider and recognized as a Tech 100 honoree by Housing Wire for the fourth consecutive year. With PropStream, you can search over 155 million properties nationwide using 120-plus search filters like pre-foreclosure, bankruptcy, pre-probate, failed listings, and more to help you find motivated sellers in seconds. PropStream offers both public record data and an MLS sales estimate that's over 99% accurate to help you get the most accurate comps even in non-disclosure states. PropStream also provides lead automation, skip tracing, and a marketing suite with emails, postcards, and custom landing pages to close more deals efficiently. Get started today with their 7-day free trial and get 50 leads for free. Head on over to www.propstream.com/BP. That's www.propstream.com/BP. You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next-day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today.
Good, good. Well, you know, I think we were going to talk about agents, and then we jump back to virtual wholesaling. So I think maybe we should jump back to...
Back to agents.
To working with agents a little bit, and you know, we'll see where the road takes us. Yeah. And yes, by the way, for everyone listening, we do have a map at how we're going to do these calls, and we we know where we're going. But you know, when things get interesting, we just go off on tangents. That's the real life, and that's what we do. So, okay. So you were an agent. Let's talk about that. Did you decide to get your license because you knew you were going to get into real estate investing, or did you get your license because you wanted to be a sales person in the real estate space?
I've always, I got my license about 2 years after, maybe 3 years after I read that Rich Dad Poor Dad the first time, always with the intent of using it for investing. I did try the residential real estate thing for about 8 months. and kind of in a crisis of, you know, hey, I have it. I might as well use it to sell to, you know, friends and family and strangers. And found out very quickly that even doing it on the side really wasn't for me. It was, 10 houses on a Saturday with people who are nitpicking over wallpaper just wasn't for me. And so I decided to, you know, just go ahead and do purely investing at that point, and always with the intention of using it for investing.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was an agent for a while in SoCal, and I had a similar feeling. It didn't work, and too much battling between, you know, potential clients. Although I worked with an investor, and that was fantastic. You know, being an agent who actually worked with an investor who knew what he wanted and knew what he was doing was probably the most fun part of my job.
Nice.
So Anson, this is coming from a perspective, because I just wrote this guy that we talked about earlier. What do you think, you know, as an agent, as somebody who's been an agent and worked with investors, what makes you happy or annoyed to work with an investor?
It makes me happy when they know what they're looking for. They know, you know, their exact areas and their exact formulas of what they want to purchase. And, you know, they can execute that quickly. So if I do bring them a house, that I can get an immediate answer, because we work kind of in an immediate type market. I mean, even when the market's bad, jumping on deals, you know, you have to be the first one there, or have the best offer. And so, you know, going to the annoying side, it's very annoying when guys don't have their stuff together, or they're very slow to respond. I like working with pros who do, you know, they know their rehab numbers. They might need to do a drive-by or just a walk, really quick walkthrough. You know, they don't need to get 10 contractor bids in order to make a decision. Obviously, everyone has to start somewhere. But you know, those guys who can execute quickly and then don't make me run around for no money and, you know, hey, can you comp these 10 properties? And, you know, they're not planning on closing on anything with me. And, you know, for an agent, that's very frustrating, and probably why I don't work with as many investors or almost any anymore, is just because most of the guys, you know, have their group of agents that they do work with. I don't need to work with investors to make a living, but you know, a lot of new guys will come up and ask me, hey, can you do, you know, these 100 things? And I know at the end of the day that they're not going to pull the trigger. And that's, for an agent, can be very frustrating.
So what can a new investor do, right? How, you know, hey, I'm brand new, I'm fresh, I've done my studying, I know, you know, I know how to analyze properties, and I want to start looking. How do I get started approaching an agent? What do I need to say to them? What do I need to, you know, bring to the picture here to not piss off every agent in town?
No, that's a great question, and one that I think about pretty often, especially when I'm fielding, you know, newer guys who are looking for that kind of help, and really, you know, knowing exactly what you're going after helps. And then, like I said, time is of the essence, and I could show, you know, I can hand you 5 deals, and if it takes you a week to get back to me on them, they'll all be gone and you'll have wasted your time and mine. And so I would say, you know, obviously have your stuff together, have your money lined up, have your contractor lined up to get in there, you know, pretty immediately. 'Cause when you are ready to pull the trigger, you have to do it pretty quickly. So, and I know that that's a lot of steps for a new guy, especially financing and contractor and having everything lined up to go. But if you're talking about MLS deals, you're usually talking about things that we need a decision on, you know, within 24 hours or less. All, you know, pretty much any offers that I blast out that are new properties on the market are within, you know, an hour or two on market. Wow. And so while that's completely unrealistic for a lot of new guys, you definitely have to have your stuff ready. 'Cause if you bail out on, 'cause you didn't have your financing ready, or if you bail out 'cause, you know, your 3 contractors and 2 didn't show up, you know, it's like, you're going to piss off agents pretty quickly.
Gotcha. That's great. That's great. Hey, really quick, for everybody listening, this is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 34. And if you want to keep up with the show notes, go to biggerpockets.com/show34. And of course, there you can ask Anson any questions you have. He'll be there to answer them for you. So definitely be sure to check out the show notes. And of course, we'll point to any resources on the show. Anson, what about you had talked about doing those BPOs. You know, for anyone who's potentially interested in doing that, how does one do that? Because it does seem like a great opportunity to really start learning how to analyze potential properties, how to get a feel for a market.
It really is, and it's more of a, you know, I was working when I started in an assistant type scenario where I was assisting an agent, and then I got dumped with a bunch of BPOs and learn how to do short sales and stuff, kind of with those crap jobs type thing. But, you know, being an assistant for an agent isn't the end of the world. You actually get paid for learning a lot of this stuff. And I've never shied away from that. I think it's a great experience. You can do that. If you're already an agent, you can try to find REO servicers who are giving out BPOs in your area, whether it's Bank of America or Wells Fargo or any of those companies that do those fee BPOs. So for money, usually for $50 to $100, you could do this BPO. And so you're getting paid to kind of learn valuation. And over the course of doing a few hundred of them, you will, you'll, first of all, you'll hate your life, but B, you'll, you will be glad that you did it, because you'll know areas and you'll be able to just to take an MLS system and use it for your own purposes. I mean, you can just look, you know exactly what you're looking for, and values come so much easier.
All right, awesome. Yeah, and we've actually got a bunch of links on our resource page at biggerpockets.com/REI that point to resources like REO banks and things like that. We've got like the original REO bank list that's got all that stuff. So you can go on there and do some research and reach out to these guys if you want to do that. Let's jump back one more time, jumping around to the topic of flipping, because you had said that you had started out by flipping and then mainly went to wholesaling. Why'd you do that?
Well, it was a handful of deals into it, and I had a great GC, general contractor, or so I thought. He did an amazing job for three properties. And then moving on to the fourth, he decided that, and it was a completely legitimate company. I mean, they had storefronts and were doing a lot of commercial jobs for McDonald's and, you know, these big, big build outs. And so you couldn't get more legit on paper than this guy. And I get a call from one of my friends on New Year's Day and said, "Hey, if you have any materials at this guy's warehouse, you better go get them, because, you know, the feds are going to come in." And I think they seized him on a tax thing. They weren't paying their taxes. And that guy ended up walking away, going to California with, you know, probably about 20 investors' money. Thankfully, that job of mine was pretty close to being done. It was about 90% done. And so I did have to go in and clean up, and got a lot of threats for liens on my own house because, he didn't pay my guys, and, you know, had to go in with my own money and fix these deals. And of course, it was all money that was lent. So my private money guy was wondering what the heck was going on. But, you know, it wasn't just me who got burned. It was, you know, me and about five other guys that I personally know, and then easily, you know, 10 or 15 other guys in town. So, I mean, it was a big operation, and it shut down overnight.
Wow.
And so at the same time, I had deals that I wasn't interested in flipping. And so I was wholesaling them. So I was thinking to myself, this was easier money with a lot less risk. And I wasn't really ready to date any more general contractors. I had my heart broken once and wasn't ready to get back out there, so to speak. But it was, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, you get burnt, and you, for a while, I mean, you're just hesitant to jump back in.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Now, did they ever end up busting this guy? Did he go to jail?
No, he's still in California, and I think that there might be a couple of guys who are looking to get in on a class action suit or something. But
nice.
At the end of the day,
Tony the Bone Breaker is looking for him somewhere.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I hired him. And Brandon, you ready to go down to California?
I'm ready. Let's go.
He's the Bone Breaker.
Nice, nice. Well, I tell you what, I had somewhat of a similar experience with a property manager, actually. And what they had done was the story is that they didn't love all the clients that they were working with and they wanted a way out. So essentially, they shut down their business and they all opened up a new business and a new name and took on all the clients that they wanted. Except here's the thing. The clients that they didn't necessarily want, they held on to their security deposits and rents and all sorts of stuff. So
that's crazy.
It was crazy shady. I got ripped off until I started blogging about it and writing about it and pressured them to pay me back. And the power of Bigger Pockets came through on that case, which was great. But yeah, you know, there's a lot of shady people out there, and unfortunately, there's not a lot you can do to kind of protect yourself against these types of crazy things happening. You know, you can protect yourself against a lot of stuff, but you know, sometimes bad things happen, and there's just not a lot you can do.
Absolutely, yeah. You can have the best contract in the world with your contractor, but if they decide to walk, your only recourse is court, and even then, you're just going to end up settling with their insurance company for, you know, pennies on the dollar of what they owe you. And I've seen that happen just recently with a friend of mine. So it's hard to find the right guy, and even when you find the right guy, he might not be the right guy. So just got to do your due diligence and do your best.
Yep.
Yeah. Crazy. So what are you going to do differently? You said you want to get back into flipping.
Yeah, it's really what I love most about real estate, taking an old, you know, a piece of junk and turning it into something really nice. And this time, you know, I was just handing draws from my private money lender, just handing draws over to my GC, and he was handling everything. And at the end, or handling everything, so I thought. But this time around, I'm kind of mentoring with a friend of mine who's teaching me how he's doing business. And I never think that you're done learning. I'm always happy just to jump in with somebody who I respect and they're doing a great job, kind of doing what I want to do and learning from them any way that I can. And so I'm kind of relearning the whole process of you know, materials, doing all the materials, ordering myself, doing the GC, or doing kind of being a GC where you're handling all the subs, you're doing payroll, you know, you're basically in charge. You have much more control over the process. And so that's what I'm in the process of right now, is kind of resetting my brain on how I'll be running the business moving forward and learning hands-on from another investor on what to do and what not to do when you're running that kind of flip business. So it's been invaluable. You're never done learning. And so I've kind of jumped back in the student thing and never ashamed to say that, you know, I'm learning all over again. So.
Well, and I think that's key too, is like that you say you're never done learning. And that's one of my favorite things about Bigger Pockets, really, is there's always somebody smarter than you at pretty much anything on Bigger Pockets. Like no matter what you want to learn about, there's somebody who's experienced it and been through more than you have. So, and if I could just encourage everyone on that note to jump in. And even if you're a pro, I mean, jump in and you could probably learn from other people things that you don't know. So, yeah, I think that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Also, then I might as well throw in here. You talked about, you know, estimating the costs and, you know, planning the budget and all that good stuff with the flips. So I might as well mention to people that if anybody out there is working on the same thing, you should definitely check out our house flipping calculator. It's at biggerpockets.com/calc. And you can kind of play around with the numbers and see what your potential profit's going to be. So that is my...
Yeah, and I've played around with it as the wholesaler and a flipper, and it does great work. I mean, I've used it on presentation style things lately. So
nice.
So you did a great job on that. And I hate to be, you know, Mr. Plug guy, but I think Jay Scott's books are great. Ever since I met him, and I want to be him when I grow up, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. No, I think he's done a great job with turning flipping into, you know, a scalable business. And that is that's the goal. I mean, onesie and twosies are great, but if you want to launch into a business, I think that his books on, you know, both estimating the costs and his main book are great at laying out a foundation of how to do that. And that's not, don't have to reinvent the wheel. You just have to, you know, find someone who's doing what you're doing and model.
Right on. And those you can find at biggerpockets.com/flippingbook. We've got those available for sale. All right. And Anson did not get paid to pitch that by any means whatsoever.
Dang it.
All right. Well, listen, last question before we move on to the next section of the interview here. And that's mistakes. I know early on you had talked about, oh, and I've got stories. And clearly you do, because the contractor story was a whopper. What other stories, mistakes have you made, or any just like kind of crazy stuff that you've been through as you've gone through your investing career?
I've done the classic wholesaler mistake when I was newbie and I didn't understand rehab costs all that well. And I've shot out deals where there was just dead silence on the other end. And when I called for some feedback from a friend, and they were just like, man, you're way off. And, you know, the more that you do this, the more people won't take you seriously. And so, and I think everybody does that at one point. It's just kind of learning the business. And, but I then took very seriously that ARV, repair value, and obviously you have to be buying a deal for someone else to buy it. But if you're off on your other numbers, you know, the next subsequent deals that you send out will just be, they'll just fall on deaf ears because people won't take you seriously anymore. And, you know, I've made those mistakes. I'll own up to them and say that from then on, I paid very, very close attention to exactly what I was sending out, so that I'm sending out the best product, you know, and build a reputation on that, hopefully. So,
don't market and pitch bad deals.
Exactly. Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly. Yep.
Right on.
Yep. And I know you guys talk about that a lot, and it's very accurate. It's it can destroy your reputation over the course of a few months if you just send out those deals all the time. So
yeah, right on. Cool. All right. Well, listen, let's jump into our
fire round.
Fire.
That was scary, Brandon. And Anson, thanks for participating.
I can't do the falsetto, quick tips that you guys do, but I'll lend to the growly voice. That's good. For sure.
I hope that people in their cars while they're listening to this podcast, I hope they do it out loud with us. Because that would be really funny. And if you do, you should like make a Vine and send it to me on Twitter or something, because that'd be fun. Anyway.
Suddenly the bigger pockets quick tip and fire rounds are going to be coming in from everywhere. In fact, you know what? Here's the challenge. If you want to do it on your own, do it, and we'll sample your recording and we'll add it to a show if it's good. So if you want to participate, jump in and help us out.
That's a good idea. All right, first question of the fire round. And again, these all come from the Bigger Pockets forums. So if you have a question, jump in the forums. You'll get probably lots and lots of answers from people, and you might get chosen your question to be on the podcast. So here we go. Number one, do you have any tips for finding good deals on Craigslist?
I'd say volume is your key. I've only done a certain amount of it, but the more consistent you are with volume and then follow up with people who do respond, the better off you are.
What do you mean by volume?
Well, it'd be like emailing pretty much everybody that you can, that meets your criteria. So if you're looking for, you know, landlords who are wanting to get out, you know, email pretty much everybody or call pretty much everybody that you can that fits your criteria. Otherwise it's a numbers game like direct mail.
Gotcha. Right on. All right. Next question. Would you invest in a property with a well or septic tank versus, say, city water?
I don't have much experience in that, but as long as the septic reports come back and the well reports come back okay, I think that you're okay. But then again, pretty much everything's on city water where I normally invest. So,
gotcha. Okay.
All right. How do you show someone who is eternally pessimistic the advantages of investing in real estate?
Eternally, this is a personal question from Brandon.
No, I saw this in the forums. I love this question.
His cats are pessimistic.
Well, Brandon, this is what I do, Brandon. I would change. No, I would definitely pretty much it's a numbers game. If you can show somebody solid numbers of why it makes sense to, you know, to buy rentals and pay them off, or buy rentals and have your tenants pay them off, and show them over the course of time. I don't think that numbers really lie, and if they're arguing against, you know, logic and real hard numbers, then, you know, it might not be someone that you can convert. But if you can show somebody a, you know, a 20, 30 year chart of, hey, if I buy this many rentals for this long, then we'll see this kind of return. And then at the end, we'll see this much cash flow. And if somebody's still pessimistic about money, then I don't know. I guess I can't help them.
Yeah. Logic prevails.
Logic prevails. That's right.
Right on. Right on. All right. So what's the smartest way to invest in real estate if you do have money?
If you do have money, I would say, if I came into, you know, 100 grand overnight, I would definitely leverage that and buy, you know, as many buy and holds as I could with that money. So instead of buying, you know, two free and clear properties, I might try to buy 10 leverage properties. That would be my personal way to do it. But yeah, it just makes sense to me that if a renter's paying your debt service, then you're pretty much moving ahead in the game.
Yep. Cool. What about some more abnormal types of properties, a little unconventional, like
abnormal,
like townhomes or duplexes? Did you wholesale anything like that?
Townhomes. Yes. They're usually, you know, they're deeded, on their own, and usually, depending on the area, they can go pretty fast or pretty good to, you know, a buy and hold type guy who doesn't want a lot of maintenance on the exterior. They'd rather just pay the HOA or whatever. But condos, I kind of shy away from. The HOA on buildings can, if that number jumps too high, it can just be just double your costs. And so I stay away from those. And usually rural, I stay away from rural properties only because there's just not as many buyers looking for those as I'd like. I'm looking for the hotter areas. So.
Preach it.
Right on. Right on. Right on.
Preach it, bro.
Yeah, don't buy up in 3,000 population Brandonville.
That's only my town. Yeah. I live outside of a larger town, Aberdeen.
A larger town that has Aberdeen 3,500 people.
It's like 35,000. Oh, okay. Josh.
Okay. Always to all the Aberdeen listeners, we respect you. We really
you,
do.
You have a big town. Yes. You feel good about it.
Yep.
You guys have a Starbucks because I know Brandon, you know, was pretty much always there.
Two Starbucks.
Oh, whoa. It's a two Starbucks
town. Two Starbucks town.
One, yeah. One traffic light and two Starbucks.
There you go.
Nice. What else do you need? What else do you need?
All right. So, you know, I'm bashing on Detroit and now suddenly Aberdeen. Jeez. Wow. Oh, my God. I'm gonna get hated.
Yep. Hate mail from everywhere.
Yes. Yes.
This is a birthplace of grunge. Aberdeen.
Is it really?
Nirvana.
Really? Nirvana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Last question. Anson. Not for Brandon. Anson, bookkeeping. What do you use? What tools? Do you use like QuickBooks or how do you manage your bookkeeping?
I manage it by giving everything to my wife, who yes. who was a bookkeeper for a long time and before she stayed at home with our son. But and she uses QuickBooks, but I've done a better job lately of kind of plugging everything into Excel, keeping receipts, and then that way it's a lot easier for my bookkeeper than to do their job, is if I have everything organized. I don't have time to do it all myself, but QuickBooks seems to be the standard of what everyone uses. So
fantastic. That's great. Cool. All right. Well, in closing up here, why don't we hit up this famous four.
All right, the first question of the famous four is, what is your favorite real estate book?
Well, Rich Dad Poor Dad was a good foundation, but not much meat in that book. I think that Millionaire Real Estate Investor by Gary Keller was probably the one that turned me around of how the game is run, and then planning with the end in mind, so you know how many deals you need to get how much money you want, those kind of things. That's a great book,
and that's a great tip, by the way, as well. The planning with the end in mind and starting from your final numbers and working backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and both those books and a whole lot of other ones are on our list, the Bigger Pockets list of the 20 best real estate books ever. So, and we'll link to that in the show notes. But anyway,
check them out. All right, favorite business book.
I'm going to be kind of a Brandon guy and say that the 4-hour work week changed my mindset. It changed my mindset. But
what's wrong with all you guys?
No.
I haven't read the book, admittedly, but my God, it's like a cult of 4-hour work week people. Nah.
And then this one's for Josh, because I can never have like one favorite, but Crush It by Gary Vaynerchuk.
Oh my God, it's Crush It! Yes, crush it now. Yes.
Wow, excited. Wow.
I got excited.
That was my Gary impression.
That is how he talks. Yeah.
Scary guy.
Yeah. Anyway, I like that book. Crush It was awesome. I recommend that too to everyone.
I haven't read that either, but the enthusiasm exudes from it.
Yes. You should read that one, Josh. That one is like you, like what? To a T.
I think it is. Yeah.
It's the opposite of the 4-hour work week. It's like the 190-hour work week. Like, yeah. He's insane. Anyway, we'll link to that in the show notes also. Everyone should read it. Hobbies.
Hobbies. Hanging out with my family. We take our son on adventures, and we've been hiking a lot lately. We did our first 14er.
Nice.
Like 3 weeks ago. And then also I play guitar and bass, most recently in a band that travels for conferences and conventions and stuff like that. So
nice.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Rock band, baby. Rock band.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
And I've seen Anson's pictures in the mountains. They're awesome. He's definitely making me a little bit envious of his adventures up there. So if you're friends with Anson, check out his Facebook pictures. They're awesome.
That's right.
Yes. All right. Last question. And since Brandon always asks this, I'm going to see if I can get it right. But what sets apart those people who really excel and exceed thrive in the field of, say, wholesaling and flipping versus those who ultimately end up disappointing themselves and their wives and failing miserably? I'm just kidding. Everybody tries things, and it's not, some things aren't for everyone. But truthfully, what does set apart those guys who really kick backside versus those who may not do as well?
You know, it's not a new answer for your podcast, but consistency. I'm going to probably try to frame it in a different way. One of my early mentors said, you're either consistent or you're non-existent. And that's so true for what you're trying to do in this business. If you're like an MLS guy, you need to be making offers every day. If you're a direct marketing guy, you need to be consistently hitting your target market. And it doesn't matter, what your strategy is. There's 10,000 ways to skin a cat in real estate. But if you're consistently pursuing a worthwhile strategy, you will do 1,000 times better than somebody who's scattered or who is a start-stop kind of guy. If you're just consistently hammering it, you will do okay. You will do. You'll be just fine.
Nice. Two tweetable topics in one statement. That was awesome.
I was going to say, I expect every single person who's listening to this to go to the show notes and click the tweet button next to that quote and go tweet it or share it on your Facebook wall, because that was good.
All right, Anson. Great answers. Great insight. Lots of really great tips along the way. We definitely appreciate you adding a little bit of quirky flavor to the quirky flavor that is already the Brandon and Josh mayhem show of Bigger Pockets.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm sorry that it's the end, since you had to scrape the bottom of the barrel to get to me.
This is the last show.
This is it. Yeah, you thought that Will Bernard's was the last show, but this is it. So, 34 and done. Good job, guys.
We'll keep going. We got lots lined up. So,
you guys are doing great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, guys, that was show 34 of the Bigger Pockets podcast with Anson Young. Definitely want to thank Anson for taking his time and joining us on the show here today. Lots of cool tips, lots of great feedback. Of course, always stuff that I know I learn something every show. And
my mind has been blown. Yep.
Mind blown, which is great. Yes. So thanks again to Anson for that. For those of you listening, again, you can definitely jump in and interact with Anson through his profile, which is linked in the show notes, or just ask him questions about the show or anything else you want to in the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show34. Otherwise, Make sure you're following us on Twitter, BiggerPockets, twitter.com/BiggerPockets, Facebook at facebook.com/BiggerPockets. We're on LinkedIn. We're on G+. We're on Pinterest. We're all over the place. So definitely make sure to follow us elsewhere and
hey,
share us, share our articles.
Can they, follow, Brandon, can they follow us on MySpace?
You know, MySpace is now owned partially by Justin Timberlake, I believe. And I think he was trying to make it relevant again as a website. And if Justin Timberlake is listening to the show, we'd love to have him on. But, you know, MySpace is, I think, is really all music focused once again. And yeah, I don't think so, man. We're not there.
I don't want to lose
not everywhere.
You now. I'm looking right at the other half of me. Oh, sorry. It's a good song.
Was that Mirrors?
Yeah, you know.
That was Mirrors. That was pretty good.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty talented. JT.
It's a hot jam. It's a hot jam. Yeah. All right. So.
Close it.
Anyway.
Close it.
As I was saying, it's time to get out of here. You guys, thank you for listening. Make sure you rate and review us on iTunes. Check out the show on iTunes and you rate and review us there. And come back to Bigger Pockets and hang out with us. There's a lot of great stuff happening. We'll see you around the neighborhood at biggerpockets.com. That said, I'm Josh Dorkin, signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Here to join the millions of others who have benefited from biggerpockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month, 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value, 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4, F-O-U-R, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.